Welcome to Naturally Nourished, a food is medicine podcast that delivers cutting-edge information and solutions for optimal health. Allie Miller is a nutrition expert sought out by the media and America's top medical institutes for her revolutionary functional medicine interventions. From disease treatment to prevention, every episode will empower you with ways to put yourself back in control of your health. Please note, the topics discussed are for educational purposes only and should not be used in place of any medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment from a licensed health professional. Now welcome your host, Allie Miller, integrative dietitian and owner of Naturally Nourished, and her vice president, integrative dietitian Carly Vogler.
Hi, everyone, and thanks again so much for listening. This is Carly, and I'm here with Allie.
Hey, guys.
If you have been keeping up with us, then hopefully you've all heard or seen that we have officially launched to iTunes. We are very, very excited. So please help us to spread the word of Food is Medicine by reviewing us and giving us some stars.
We're feeling like a real podcast these days.
Woo! We're getting there.
We're not just sitting in a bedroom on a table talking.
So today we're going to talk all about leaky gut. If anyone's heard of that, it is also called gut intestinal enteropathy, which many people with digestive dysfunction may have heard of. And if not, then they may just know the symptoms associated with it. So we're definitely going to be walking you through what it is and how to treat it. Allie, but let's start off by talking about what leaky gut is.
Yeah, it's really funny, actually. We had a meeting with our marketing team, and I was thinking of the guy laughing and being like, ha, 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 leaky gut.
That sounds fake almost.
Oh, right. Some people have no association of what this is, but it really is the root cause of so many chronic conditions, and that's because all disease starts with the gut. And Hippocrates said that thousands of years ago, beyond his phrase of let food be thy medicine. I think that just as much of a distinctive, impactful phrase is that all disease begins in the gut. And that's because the gut-blood barrier is the number one introduction to so many different antigens, proteins, and also the primary source of nutritional absorption. So when we're talking about in past episodes of how micronutrient deficiencies can drive dysfunction, or how bacteria can drive dysfunction, or how hormones can drive dysfunction, all of this can be regulated by the state of the GI tract. So conditions that even seem non-related to things like IBS or IBD or digestive concerns, things like dermatitis or thyroiditis or hormonal, as I mentioned, or any autoimmune disease, really, we always think as functional medicine practitioners, what is the state of that patient's gut or digestive tract?
I think this is such an important point because so many people know something is wrong and they can't put their finger on what's going on. They suspect a food intolerance. They go to their GI or other physician and, you know, sometimes they say, oh, it doesn't matter what you eat. It has nothing to do with that. And it is just the exact opposite.
And I think an important thing to mention with you bringing that up, Carly, on our blog, actually this week, we were focusing on what the difference is between a food sensitivity and a food allergy. So a lot of you may have had blood work done by your physician or practitioner on a food allergy. And, you know, the number one food allergy assessment is an IgE, which is the immediate hypersensitivity for like shellfish or peanuts. When we're talking about leaky gut, we are not talking about a food allergy as an immediate hypersensitivity or onset. We're talking about a delayed sensitivity reaction. So even beyond an IgG assessment, which is a different, more delayed immunoglobulin response, we're talking about how the state of that gut, when it is degraded or worn down, the antigens or the food particles that you consume go into the bloodstream at high amounts, and this upregulates our immune system. And so again, our immune system is like our surveillance system of the body, and it's like a high pollen day all of a sudden. So now it gets this whole high uprise of antigens, and it has to detect, because it's so overwhelming to the system, it starts to tag certain compounds as foreign invaders and starts to create inflammatory cascades of reactions. And so having a leaky gut reaction you might not even think of a food sensitivity, because it could be joint pain or something like that.
Right. And that's what we'll get more into. So
yes.
So what you've elucidated so far is that these molecules of protein or different foods that people eat get into areas of the body that don't belong there, The body says, hey, you're an invader, tags it, and the body can essentially attack itself. So
yes.
I guess the question next is, what causes these proteins to be able to get somewhere in the body where they don't belong?
Yes. So a lot of things that can drive this, I would break it down into foods. So we'll talk about foods that can be primary irritants. Also, we'd be looking at infections or things that are going to create wear and tear in the GI tract itself. And then toxins are another one to look at for certain. So when we look at the number one food that causes the destruction to the gut, it is going to be gluten. And the reason behind this is that gluten has a compound called gliadin. And so gliadin proteins tend to break down and release zonulin. And zonulin is another protein that actually engages with the GI lining, the microvilli, or those finger-like projections, and it unlatches the tight junctions that are supposed to keep them really nice and locked and closed. So regardless of if you have gluten sensitivity as far as a reaction, so maybe you don't have a migraine, maybe you don't get joint pain, maybe you have no gastric distress, but even for non-symptomatic people, we have to acknowledge that gluten plays a role with unlatching those tight junctions. And so it's mechanically, in a way, leading to this leaky gut.
So for those who eat gluten and they don't feel that they have any reaction to it, could this still be happening to them and they just don't know?
Absolutely. So that's why we recommend, of course, you know, doing as many carbohydrate choices from starchy vegetables or fruits and going gluten-free. Our entire cookbook is gluten-free for that reason, because that's the most anti-inflammatory approach. And then if you're to do bread, I really recommend only sourdough, because in the culturing of that product, the sour cultures are made from probiotics, and those actually break down the gliadin. So the zonulin has less of an influence on the GI tract.
Okay, so number one food to avoid for this leaky gut would be gluten. What other foods cause the breaking down of the GI lining?
So breaking down of the GI lining is also going to be seen with lectins. And this is the concept behind the Paleolithic diet, or the paleo movement of removing legumes and grains in general. So lectins are the compounds that are in the external elements of the grain that protect it, because grains, of course, are stagnant. They're not running away from their invaders like, you know, an animal will in the food chain. And so all vegetables and plant-based products tend to have some form of an anti-nutrient or a compound that blocks the absorption of nutrition or is going to interfere with the digestive process. And that's that plant's natural defense. So grains and beans actually need to be soaked or sprouted for optimal nutrient absorption and to avoid that lectin influence. The lectins are like a sticky, soapy-like compound that can create destruction on the gut level, not necessarily in that zonulin influence as the gluten is, but it will play a role with the tight junctions of the gut and can be an abrasive irritant to the GI tract.
And I think this is worth asking about. I was just explaining this in a session, and I had some clients ask some really good questions. So what nuts does this include? Is it all nuts? Is it almonds specifically? Does it have to do with almond butter? Do they need to be soaked before, you know, processing the almonds? What's kind of some of the details on soaking?
So then there's a compound with like nuts. It's actually more of the phytate compounds than the high lectin. And so with nuts, yes, the harder, the shell, the longer the soak time. So like almonds require up to 8 to 12 hours, whereas something like walnuts with a really paper thin skin are more of like a 4-hour soak. And optimally, yes, all nuts should be soaked and then dehydrated prior to consumption. And nowadays you can find, like on our Amazon store, we have links to soaked, pre-soaked and dehydrated nuts. And so these are things that you can buy in advance. It is time consuming, but that can be very beneficial, especially if your gut is in a vulnerable state. With that being said, some people have a resilient enough GI tract where something like nuts and seeds isn't going to be an irritant, and going grain-free will be a step enough. And then there's other people who even can incorporate grains as an occasional indulgence because they're maintaining their gut integrity with other therapeutic compounds like probiotics and an otherwise anti-inflammatory diet.
Okay. And so if you are soaking the beans to break down the lectins, how long should people soak beans for?
Beans are also at least 12 hours. I generally say overnight for like chickpeas, navy beans, black beans.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then you want to discard that soak water and then cook them. And actually, we like to cook them, we mentioned this in our blog and cookbook, with kombu. And kombu is a sea vegetable strip. And that kombu further breaks down the phytates. So it actually makes the beans then also less gassy. That gas or bloating that some people get from beans is an exact element of that anti-nutrient, and that creates that digestive distress.
Okay, I think that's helpful to know. So gluten, lectins, what other foods?
So foods, I would also put, I suppose, excessive sugar. Sugar can be an irritant to the GI tract, and then mostly because sugar feeds bad bacteria and yeast, so it's kind of a catch-22, and sugar compounds in themselves can be relatively abrasive. And then when I think of sugar, I always think of high fructose corn syrup, and I would throw in the entire grouping of genetically modified crops. So of course, corn being one of the preliminary, corn, soy, and now beet sugar are some of the primary sources of genetically modified compounds. And the concern with this is that a lot of the GMOs are going to have higher glycophosphate residue. And glycophosphate is used in the pesticides element. And that's another, you know, thing that we're spraying insecticides and pesticides. And so higher Roundup residue, which has the glycophosphate, is found on these Roundup ready crops. And that's because they're modified to withstand higher amounts of chemical exposure. So then the farmer is going to apply higher amounts of chemicals that kills all the weeds around it, allows the crop to survive, but the pesticide residue is 10 to 100 times higher. The issue with that is these toxins are both hormonal disruptors for our body, but they're also significant gut irritants. And then there's a particular kind of GMO corn called BT corn, which stands for Bacillus thermalysis or thermalis, I don't know. Don't quote me on that, but it's a bacteria strain. And it is inserted to the gene of the corn where it's to kill the roundworms that you know, when you buy your corn at the grocery store, you might peel it in the top to make sure that that worm hasn't gotten at the top. And so this BT ready corn, the way that it works is it's an endotoxin. And so as that worm eats the corn kernel, its intestines explode. And so it's literally path of destruction is through beyond leaky gut. It's gut destruction. And so we're seeing in research that that residue buildup in the body is a huge element driving food allergies. And that's how we're seeing, you know, the rise of autism, ADHD, neurobehavioral conditions, and tying this back to this processed refined diet, because a lot of that comes back to the GMOs.
I think that's just so important to know, and not to use as a scare tactic, but it's to inform people, because I think when we talk through a lot of these things, people can kind of probably just get overwhelmed, take a step back and say, this is too much to worry about. I just want to eat. It can't be that harmful. Food is food. But when you hear the whys behind it, hear that how the Roundup actually affects the insects, then it just, the pieces become a little bit more connected. I think it makes so much more sense. Yes.
To think of your GI tract exploding.
Yeah. So on a bigger level, you can see how this can add up and how important it is to know where your food came from and what's happening to it.
Absolutely.
Who grew it and what are they spraying on it?
I think it's really timely with Earth Day coming up and the March Against Monsanto movements that are coming in April and May. And so we'll start to hopefully see more awareness throughout the country during this time of the year against the movement of GMOs and for the labeling, so we can at least be conscious consumers and be aware of what we're consuming for sure.
Absolutely. And bringing attention to the subject will help fund research too, so we can have more research to prove what we already know, how harmful these GMOs can be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that kind of leads us into our next one, environmental and other toxins, which you mentioned can really disrupt the gut.
And those would be the big ones I would hit. And then, of course, I mean, any valent toxin is going to be harmful to the GI tract because it's such tender tissue. So really avoiding toxins. And within toxins, I think of excessive alcohol consumption, unfortunately, because that plays a big role. I don't know why I said unfortunately.
Because we like alcohol sometimes.
Unfortunately. That's funny. I don't care about any of the rest of them. But yes, the alcohol is an irritant for the GI tract. It's also sterilizing to the GI tract. And so it's going to kill off your good bacteria, and in itself is an irritant. So it's going to wear away at the GI lining. Also, Aleve and NSAIDs, so not just the brand of Aleve, Advil, and any of your non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, and you'll read on the back in the warning, may cause GI bleeding. That's because it's a significant GI irritant, and that definitely drives that leaky gut. And another medication to be mindful of, and so that would also include your prescription NSAIDs, of course. And then another medication to be mindful of is birth control, actually. A lot of people don't make that connection, but birth control can have a sterilizing role in your gut bacteria and can hence lead to the leaky gut pathology. So,
oh, that one's really big.
So environmental toxins, toxins from the diet, and also medications are a big one. And I think the last one to mention is stress. Cognitive stress or physiological stress. So physiological stress could be recovering from a surgery, cognitive stress, just, you know, your day-to-day function in your GI really takes a hit from your mental stress load. And we've talked about how your digestive enzymes reduce during times of stress. It also plays a role in your pH of your gastric area, which plays a big role then on what bacteria lives and dies in your gut. And so stress definitely has a huge influence. And then I think of also within toxins like chlorine in the tap water. A lot of the chemicals that purify our water systems are going to also create and drive this leaky gut.
Right. There's so many people when they ask this question in session, they're like, well, I only eat organic and I've never been on birth control. And you kind of go down the line. And once you get to stress and water, you're like, everyone's in this category.
It's true. We're all susceptible. And I think the last one to touch on before we move on, you know, what we can do about this and how this causes is the candida or yeast overgrowth. And, you know, dysbiosis or bad bacteria growth in general, if you think of this visual of the GI lining as being these nice tight finger-like projections, if there's yeast lining the GI tract, that's going to create separation and space. And so that's not going to allow this nice tight finger-like junctions to lock. And that spacing is going to drive higher antigen exposure or that leaky gut.
For sure. So very clear that there are lots of ways that you can develop leaky gut, to say the least, which makes a lot of sense why so many people might struggle with digestive disorders. Let's move on to talk about signs and symptoms that people might be suffering with so they can identify if this is them as well. And then we'll get into the ways to treat.
Okay. So I think, yes, starting with digestive is the most direct path. And so when we're talking about digestive issues, this could be things like gas, bloating, diarrhea, to any form. So it could be either sticky stools, loose stools, watery stools, constipation, and any form of really irritable bowel syndrome. We can also see things like seasonal allergies on uprise or reactive airway syndrome or asthma. This can actually play a huge role that we don't directly connect to the gut. But again, the higher antigens, the body in the bloodstream is trying to get rid of them, and it can go into the bronchial function. And so that can play a huge role with our sleep apnea, our asthma, reactive airway, and the allergies. Also thinking of things like hormones. So hormones are an entire section that we tend to separate as well. But we see a lot of our patients with infertility or polycystic ovarian syndrome, estrogen dominance, and any form of PMS or cyclical irregularity, so not having regulation within their cycle. A lot of this has to do with the pathway of leaky gut, because again, if the immune system is constantly in inflammation, inflammation throws the hormonal expression off. And then that doesn't allow for balanced hormonal function. And in an infertility or miscarriage case, the inflammation can make that uterus an unhappy environment, and that doesn't allow for healthy fetal implantation. So that can play a huge role there as well.
I think a lot of these, and as we kind of get down the list, the big thing to simplify is a way to think about it. If the body is dealing with any sort of distraction, and in this case, the distraction is these antigens that have leaked into the bloodstream, it causes imbalance because the body's got to deal with protecting the body.
Yep.
So other things get shut down.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great way to simplify it. And I also want to make note before I go on to the next disease states is that, you know, again, this word antigen is a protein particle from any compound. So any food, and this is where we use the concept that someone's superfood can be someone else's kryptonite. Mm-hmm. I think it's really wild to know that we have patients that have their most severe reactions with leaky gut to foods like coconut, including coconut oil, you know, which we love and talk about so beneficial, mm-hmm. or blueberry or salmon or
I've been
ginger.
Spinach a lot lately, yep. Which is so sad.
Yep. And so it's, you know, the question is, you know, based on what they're consuming, it can be a two-part. One can be they're consuming this food because they know it's healthy. They're in the pathway of trying to heal their body. but yet based on their gut integrity or their gut lining, their immune system is overburdened with that particular antigen or compound. You could think of an antigen as a tag unique to the food. And so their body keeps seeing that coconut in the bloodstream in too high of amounts. It kind of jumps on it and says, well, this doesn't belong here. And every time you have coconut, I'm going to send inflammatory signals. So it's important to acknowledge, you know, that someone's superfood can be someone else's kryptonite.
And we'll get into how we can identify those things in a moment.
So, so we talked hormones. The next whole classification of disease states, I would say, would be autoimmune disease. So this, of course, opens a huge umbrella. This could be things like rheumatoid arthritis. This could be things like Hashimoto's thyroiditis, lupus, psoriasis, celiac disease. This opens up to things like multiple sclerosis and so forth. And so this is a huge element, again, because the immune system is overburdened with the compounds. And just as we talked about in our immune episode, we could also tie cancer. Cancer we usually think of as an underreactive immune system, so the other edge of that sword, whereas autoimmune system is the immune system attacking itself. Also, if the immune system is overwhelmed with these antigens, it's not tailoring and targeting tumor activity. So it's not understanding, oh, this is a foreign invader, we need to fight this because it's so overwhelmed with that darn coconut or whatever it is from the leaky gut. So cancer would be another one to think of.
And this is something that we touched on also in the HPA Access podcast, where once we have some dysfunction, we know that the body goes hyperreactive, and that's where these autoimmune diseases fall into tag. So the body's going in overdrive to protect itself, and it in turn can start attacking itself.
Yes. We can also see chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia. So these antigens can lead to soft tissue destruction or inflammation in the skeletal muscular system, or just generalized fatigue in general. That inflammation can play a role with the cognitive function, the cortisol influence, which goes back to hormones. We can see mood influence and cognitive influence, things like depression, anxiety, ADHD, and even connections to the autistic spectrum of conditions with the leaky gut.
I think this is huge, especially for kiddos, because so many moms just worry about, you know, why do they have attention deficit? I don't want to put them on medication.
Right.
What could be causing this? And there are a couple different approaches, but let's talk about how they were born, right?
Yep.
Vaginally versus C-section and that inoculation, if you want to touch on that really quickly.
Sure. Well, I mean, if it all starts with the gut, giving the child good bacteria from ground one is the first line of defense. And so when we're talking about a child that's born with a cesarean section versus vaginal, they're not getting that birth canal inoculation. And then also, to take it further, formula-fed babies versus breast milk-fed babies aren't getting active bioavailable enzymes and probiotics. And so with the breast milk, they're getting live probiotics. And now formula manufacturers are trying to catch on to that and trying to add probiotics to their products, but they're not going to be ever as effective as a biological compound. And
sure,
breast milk, I mean, it's phenomenal to learn about and understand how dynamic how the breast milk provides what the baby needs. So I mean, there's just no comparison at all.
Right.
And what was I gonna say about
antibiotics when they have?
Yeah,
I was just thinking that.
Yep. So the children that are dealing with otitis media or chronic ear infections, mm-hmm. antibiotics are a huge cause. And this all kind of goes back to that GAPS diet. So there's actually a book out by Dr. Natasha McBride. And she wrote The Gut and Psychology Syndrome book, which is the GAPS diet. So it's an acronym that's very commonly used. And there's actually been research done on things like schizophrenia and really severe cognitive influence. And it all ties back to this leaky gut, that basically if these antigens cross the blood-gut barrier, they also can cross the blood-brain barrier. And that plays total chaos in your brain with the firing of your neurotransmitters.
Yeah, I think this is so interesting. So it might be overwhelming, but just like anything else we say, I think it's empowering to know that there's ways to approach fixing these things.
For sure.
For gut restoration, which we're going to get to in a moment. But let's just cover a couple more signs and symptoms that you might be suffering from leaky gut.
So another big one is dermatitis. So we talked about psoriasis with the concept of autoimmune, but even taking that a step further, looking at things like rosacea, eczema, we see that as a huge element with our pediatric population and adults. And then acne. All of this can be highly correlated to this leaky gut. Candida overgrowth, as we mentioned as well. And then finally, I would say food allergies or food intolerances. So again, your immune system is going to be higher reactive to these compounds, and that's going to then perpetuate this driving reaction of the intolerance or allergy.
So a lot of these things that you just mentioned, I think, are interestingly enough, not so obvious. I think the more obvious ones you'd associate with leaky gut are right. What we talked about first, IBS, digestive issues, food allergies or intolerances, but the autoimmune, the psychological imbalances,
yes.
I think those are the ones that might be the aha for people.
Right,
it's really
right.
Surprising.
And so like you said, you know, thinking of, well, what am I having a food intolerance to? That might not be the first question on many people's minds, but it might be our first question as practitioners and
sure.
Something to definitely think through.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's talk about how we approach this. How can we heal a leaky gut?
Okay, so we use a 3 or 4 R approach. Sometimes I combine two of the R's, but the first R is to remove the irritant. And so with leaky gut, I like to identify the irritant using a mediator release test. This is a blood test that looks at 150 foods and chemicals. And so in the chemical section, there are natural chemicals and additive chemicals. So a natural chemical would be something like caffeine or capsaicin, the spicy component in peppers, or solanine, the chemical in your nightshade family. An additive chemical would be something like benzoate or benzenes or
yellow number 3,
right, red 40. And there's things that are in the middle, like lecithin. Lecithin could be an artificial chemical or it could be natural in the egg yolk, you know. So we typically see things like soy lecithin added to chocolate bars and such. So chemical section, it looks at the dairy section, breaking down variants between whey, cottage cheese, yogurt, cow's milk, and different forms of dairy. Then it looks at flavor enhancers, which is herbs, seasonings, and spices. So things like turmeric and ginger and oregano. It looks at fruits and vegetables and then your grain family. So beyond just assessing of a gluten intolerance, which again, we would recommend across the board for best outcomes, it's going to assess different forms of grains. So things like rye versus barley versus spelt or quinoa and millet. What's really interesting here is they'll often have patients that have been gluten-free for a couple years, and yet they're replacing that gluten with maybe quinoa or millet or oats or corn. Corn is in a lot of gluten-free products, of course, mm-hmm. and that tends to then be a big reaction. So being mindful that we want to customize this to each patient, and we want to see unique to their immune system or surveillance system what their reaction is. So it also looks at seafood, beans, nuts, and legumes, proteins, and then miscellaneous. And the way that this test works is it is a blood test, again, that looks at 150 of these foods and chemicals. And after the blood is drawn from the patient, it gets shipped to the lab. And the lab induces in 150 different test tubes these antigens or these proteins from these food particles and looks at a inflammatory reaction from the patient's blood. So it actually tests for things like cytokines and prostaglandins and interleukins, all of these nerdy biochem terms that anti-inflammatory medications and steroids and different anti-inflammatory interventions are blocking the production of. And so it's actually seeing in a lab setting what drives anger or inflammation in the body specific to the individual. And then we tailor a diet for the patient, removing the moderate reactions for at least 90 days and then the very severe reactions for double that time frame or 180 days.
And if you're looking for more information on this test or want a visual of it, go to alliemillerrd.com under the treatments tab. You can either go to food sensitivities and it'll take you through this approach and have a link to the MRT test, or you can keep going down to labs and then MRT inflammatory food panel. And there's a lot more information. You can even order this test online if this is something you want to go forward with.
Yes, and so we have our online labs set up in two different ways. One way, there's like an A and a B option. In the A option, you would do this with just a 15-minute review where I would just be on the phone with you or Skype for 15 minutes, just real quickly walking through the results. And then you would meet with your own practitioner or you would meet with a different practitioner to implement the plan, or you can actually upgrade to do a full session with me. And in that session, we would be customizing and tailoring the rest to execute this entire RRR protocol. So just so you know, kind of the distinguishing between those two. So anyway, yes, this MRT test is a huge tool that we use to create a tailored elimination diet. So you may have already, again, avoided gluten, corn, soy, or some of these other irritants. And if you're not getting outcomes, then this is definitely the test for you. Other things we think about removing is removing toxins. So we might consider driving a detox for the patient, but more specific for leaky gut, we're really looking at the MRT diet. And then we might also look at removing bacteria, parasite, yeast. So in the MRT, we do assess for candida, but we would use something like a stool assessment or a different way of looking at the body if we thought it was more pathological from a bacteria strain. However, again, going back to leaky gut, we're really looking at what antigens is it? What food particles is it?
Okay, so that was the first R, which is remove. So the whole point of the MRT test that Ali went into is to identify what your personal kryptonite, quote unquote, foods are to remove them from the diet. And it's actually crazy how many clients run this test and have such a quick recovery from things like reflux and IBS. And it's really empowering. It's exciting to be able to help people so quickly.
Awesome testimonials, pictures of patients' hands that have had severe swelling from rheumatoid arthritis. And within the first 3 weeks, they're able to reduce their prednisone dosage and so forth. Really awesome stuff we see.
So our number two is restore proper digestion. So let's talk about what.
So this is the one that can be drawn into two different R's. You know, it could be restore and re-inoculate, or it can just be restore. So I tend to, within restore, put the re-inoculate or providing restoring optimal bacteria. So that would be that re-inoculate beneficial bacteria, adding in a probiotic and probiotic-rich foods, which are going to help to line the GI tract in a favorable way. So we talked about how that yeast can create separation in the gut lining. Well, probiotics can actually help to drive metabolic end products, which can help to tighten the GI lining. And they can also help with optimizing nutritional absorption and then defending off bad bacteria overgrowth. So getting a restoration of probiotics is a huge piece of optimizing your gut function and tightening back up that leaky gut per se. Other things we would consider with Restore is restoring optimal digestive enzymes. So in general, if you're not breaking down the food particles that you're consuming amply, you're going to have a lot of roughage and undigested abrasive compounds that are hitting the tender intestines. You know, really the gastric pouch or the stomach is supposed to deliver a slurry or like a really blended smoothie to the intestines. But if you lack enzymes and you lack acid, you're going to have an issue with more leaky gut as those abrasive compounds travel either to slow down the GI lining or they kind of create and beat up the lining as they travel down.
I was just going to say, I really like the metaphor that we often use the MRT test being the GPS and then the restore components being the road work.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we need those enzymes to make sure that we can address the digestive tract, because if we're talking about something like milk, for instance, or dairy family, people can have lactose intolerance where they don't make lactase enzyme appropriately. However, the milk or the dairy protein itself might not be an antigen that's driving inflammation. So it's a different mechanism of why maybe they may not tolerate. Same thing with, like, for instance, patients that don't tolerate fats. Maybe they've had a gallbladder removal, so they need to take bile, they need to take hydrochloric acid, they need to take lipase, all these things to restore their digestive process, but they may not have a sensitivity to, let's say, olive oil or something like that. But yet olive oil might cause diarrhea because they're not absorbing it. They're having that digestive distress. So totally, they work hand in hand. And so proper digestion is going to be the restoring the probiotics, restoring enzymes, and we like to recommend enzymes that also are used in conjunction with ox bile. I really love the DigestAid product. I think it's fantastic, and that's our private label for that. We just see really awesome clinical outcomes, and it's a total game changer to switch enzymes to something like that. And then hydrochloric acid. So especially patients that were on proton pump inhibitors like omeprazole or Nexium or Protonix, these drugs block their production of acid, and then that can play a role with not activating the digestive enzymes. It can also play a role with not breaking down food particles and allowing bad bacteria to overgrow.
Okay, so that was the first 2/3 R's.
Yes, remove, restore, and inoculate, yes.
Okay, and then the final cherry on top is the repair component.
Yes, so I mean, this is the essential element to treating leaky gut. You know, the re-inoculate and restore are optimal digestion and helpful for micronutrients and things like that. But if we really want the cat's pajamas or the focus on restoration of leaky gut, this is the repairing the gut lining. So we're looking for, at this stage of the game, that my favorite amino acid for this is glutamine. Glutamine has been shown in research to be both a fuel source and a building block to enterocytes or gut cells. So L-glutamine is used to actually rebuild any degradation or wear and tear or breakdown of those finger-like projections and actually help to repair those cells, and then feeds those gut cells to continue to regenerate and regrow. And this is something that I've used with patients, that this is when their gastroenterologists say, okay, what did you do with my patient? Because they've run a follow-up colonoscopy on my Crohn's patient or my ulcerative colitis patient, and they look better than they did, you know, with any diagnosis, prior to the diagnosis. And so glutamine is a huge player here. We also look at, within the glutamine family, I like to use a synergy product that has DGL, or diglycerized licorice. The DGL takes out the compound that would raise the blood pressure in the licorice root, so this makes it more user-friendly. And the licorice itself helps to repair ulceration. So it's actually repairing any breakdown or wear and tear in the GI. And then the other ingredient in my GI lining formula is aloe vera. And so aloe, like we use topically on a sunburn, very cooling, very anti-inflammatory, and one of my favorite words, mucilaginous, which really translates to like oopy goopy. So the mucilaginous slime, or if that's kind of how I envision it, of the aloe vera really coats and soothes the GI tract as that glutamine and DGL is delivered. So there's the product, again, is called GI Lining, and that has all three of those in there. And that's one of the big ones I start with for leaky gut restoration. And then food sources, I like to recommend collagen and gelatin. So these both help with connective tissue. These also help with tightening the finger-like projections. Always look for a good source, like your grass-fed source. You could get collagen and gelatin in bone broth, which is why we're huge fans of making bone broth from scratch. Then going beyond that, you can even use gelatin and collagen powder.
I love those powders. I also recommend them just in general to either, you know, substitute, replace your normal whey protein sometimes, or just do half and half, because it's amazing for hair, skin, and nails. And who doesn't want better hair, skin, and nails anyway? So it's kind of
supple skin for sure. And, you know, especially when we're talking about some of the crossover with the disease state, a lot of people dealing with thyroid conditions have issues with hair, skin, and nails. And so getting that connective tissue support with the collagen, or the people with the joint pain.
That's what I was going to say next.
People that are on board waiting for their knee replacement, or in things like that, rheumatoid arthritis population, osteoarthritis, getting the gelatin and collagen really helps with the joint and the bone function, which is super big deal.
And those are just great for prevention too. Maybe not the GI lining, that's more acute care, but the collagen, the gelatin, the bone broth, those are things that can be a part of your everyday diet.
And like we've talked about in the ketosis or other podcast episodes, using the bone broth is a great way to tame cravings at bed. Very therapeutic and very savory. In our cookbook, we do bone broth three ways. So we add miso, turmeric, different compounds to make it even further nourishing and therapeutic for the body.
Okay, so we went through the 3R approach. And if you want to dive further into that, Allie, I believe we have a webinar coming up, don't we?
Yes. So if you're listening to this real time, we have a webinar coming out May 4th. Yeah, 5-4. And that's available at noon and 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. It's going to have a lot more information and a lot of research, and I'll be digging deeper into these 3 R's of gut restoration, what they mean, and how you can look deeper. And we'll also be showing you an example of that MRT test, talking about some of my most successful patient outcomes and the really challenging clinical case studies.
Okay, perfect. And just for those who are curious, how long can people expect this gut restoration process to take if this is something that they want to undergo?
So like we said, you know, you can start seeing results pretty quickly, but as far as a commitment period, we're looking for a minimum of 6 months to a year to really see good clinical outcomes and really see a change in their gut state. And what's beautiful is I always tell my patients, with restriction comes freedom. And it sounds kind of counterintuitive, but the more you adhere to this protocol, the more strategic and really focused you are, the more down the line resilience you have. And so that requires less restriction as far as medication or illness, sick days, just feeling overall crummy. And then your tolerance for your foods too. We can definitely see changes in your tolerance of being able to have some of these foods that are kind of borderline or indulgences should be able to have no reaction down the line as you repair that gut lining.
Okay, perfect. And lastly, for anyone listening who's curious about where to get the GI lining or the collagen or any of those things, where should people go?
So yeah, just as some quick resources for you guys, on our shop, we do have that nutritional supplementation tab under there. Well, you can actually search, our site's very user-friendly to search, so you could even search leaky gut in our website, and actually blogs will come up, this podcast will come up. But the product, the GI lining or leaky gut support will come up. You could either do just the GI lining tub or the leaky gut kit, which includes collagen, gelatin, and the GI lining. And then, like Carly said, we have the webinar coming up, which will soon be archived. So you can also download that down the line. And then Carly had mentioned the MRT test, which is available under treatments and then lab services.
Okay, wonderful. Thanks again for listening, everyone. And don't forget to rate us on iTunes, please. We so appreciate it. Yes. And we'll see you on episode 25, hopefully.
Yes, and please give us feedback on the Ask Ally tab. Ask us a question if we've sparked something that's driven a further investigation type question in your mind. And we're really working with these episodes from what we've listened to, what we've experienced, to give you guys a little bit of a step further of an actual solution to these problems. So I'm hoping that this is helpful for you, and we don't overwhelm you, but we provide you a nice platform with all of the resources we're teeing up. So let us know how you guys think about that and how we can help you take your food as medicine journey further. Until next time.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Naturally Nourished podcast. Visit our blog at alliemillerrd.com for recipes, wellness tips, and food as medicine meal plans. Connect with Ally and Carly at alliemillerrd on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Until next time, stay nourished and be well.